Today is October 6, 2009. We are at the Amelia Island Museum of History at 233 South 3rd Street in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing James H. Jones, who was born November 6, 1932, in Fernandina Beach, Florida. My name is Bobby Faust, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Gerhard Timm, who will be operating the recording equipment. Jim, why don't we start out with, you were born in 1932. So what were you doing at the time that you decided to join the Air Force, and why did you choose to enlist, and why did you pick the Air Force?
Well, I just graduated from high school. I was working at the Island Theater. It used to be down here on Atlantic Avenue. And this friend of mine, Melvin Beckham, he and I, we grew up together, and we both decided we was going into the Air Force. We started to go to the Navy, but we didn't like the bell-bottom trousers, so we went in the Air Force. That's why we joined the Air Force.
Because I would imagine that, was Fernandina Beach back then much of a Navy town?
It was Navy, yep.
Yeah. Did many of your classmates decide to enlist, or did they wait for the draft?
There was about four or five of us. We didn't all go at the same time. He and I went first. Mm-hmm. And then there were several others that went behind us.
And they did?
There was a couple of them waiting for the draft, but the rest of them, we went.
And how big was your high school class, just out of curiosity?
37.
Wow. What was life like during high school and right upon graduation here in Fernandina?
Well, you knew everybody, and you could leave your doors open in the house, and had to worry about nobody going in your house. And it was very quiet and easy going town.
What kind of occupations were people involved with?
Most of them were the paper mills and fishing. Shrimp boats were all up and down here. I had an uncle owned a shrimp dock down here in town. And that was a big shrimping.
Well, were there many job opportunities for people out of high school? Or
we all seemed to have something we could do all the time.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you enlisted. You were 19 years old, just out of high school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you and your buddy enlisted in the Air Force.
Right.
Tell me what happened then. What was your? Where did you go for basic training?
Lackland Air Force Base.
Okay.
And we were there for 8 weeks. And then I graduated from basic training there, and they sent us to Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Okay, that must have been.
And that's the first time I've ever seen snow. We got to Cheyenne, and it was snowing, and that was in September.
And it didn't stop snowing for a long time.
A long time, right? And then I graduated from basic training, tech school there, and they sent me to Alaska for 2 years.
You really got your fill of snow, didn't you?
Right.
And cold. What was the focus of your training?
I was in cryogenics. First, they told me, when you first went in, they called it gas generation. You manufacture oxygen and nitrogen for the aircraft, for the missile. Well, at that time, I didn't use the missiles. It was the aircraft, welding, and hospitals. And then they started the missile program. Then we started manufacturing oxygen and nitrogen for missiles. And the aircraft, and still.
Was this something that you chose, or they chose? Or
no, they chose it. They give a test, and they tell you this is what you qualified for. When I went to service, I wanted to be an electrician, I thought.
Uh-huh.
But I ended up in cryogenics.
And this is where you stayed the whole time?
I stayed the whole time.
Okay.
Well, not the whole time. At the end, when I made senior master sergeant, they changed my career field.
Oh, really? Well, we'll get to that then. Yeah. Okay, so what was your training like?
Well, you learned to, you went through the basic flow of how your plants run, oxygenizing treatment plants run. You learned through the maintenance, how to repair them. And you had to take some welding and soldering, electrical, and mechanical. You had to have, that's the schooling you had to have.
So it was basically an intense tech school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So then after your training and after your tech training, then you went to Alaska for two years. And what were your basic jobs there?
We manufactured oxygen and nitrogen there for the hospital and the welding and the aircraft.
Okay, so that would have been...
No, it was in 52 to 55. 50, no. Yeah, 52 to 55.
Okay, and...
When did he send 52 to 55, yeah.
What kind of, I mean, what was your typical day like there?
Well, mostly in the summertime it was all daylight.
Uh-huh.
Nighttime it was dark. Wintertime it was dark all the time.
Yeah.
And we had a service club and stuff to go to and things like that. Did a lot of hunting and fishing while I was there.
Oh, really? Yeah. Now, is that things that you had done here on Fernandina, too?
Yeah.
So, except you were just hunting and fishing different kinds of things.
Country, yeah.
Yes.
So we had a good time.
Any particular incidents that you can recall? Or
there?
Yeah.
Not any particular ones there, no.
Okay. So, so basically you were just helping, processing this nitrogen.
Oxygen. Mm-hmm. You were operating the plants and maintaining them.
Okay. So then where were you?
Then I came from there to Chanute Air Force Base and I come to Shaw Field, South Carolina.
Where?
Shaw Field,
okay.
South Carolina.
Okay.
And in Shaw Field, I was first got there, they didn't have an oxygen plant there. So they signed me to the electric shop. And I worked in the electric shop in civil engineering for about 8 months. Then they put me in field maintenance, and I worked in field maintenance where the aircraft was. I worked in the office there for just now assigned. So they got an oxygen plant in.
Mm-hmm.
And when the oxygen plant came in, I went to work on the oxygen plant there. So I was there for, I left there in 57. Yeah. I went there in 55 and left 57.
Okay, during the 50s, this is the height of the Cold War, and like you were in Alaska for several years.
At that time, they considered that overseas because Alaska wasn't a state.
Oh, that's true.
They had a big sign down
in
Anchorage that says, voters in the United States.
Did you feel much tension being that you were that close to the Soviet Union at the time, or was it something that people just ignored? I mean, did you?
No, you felt the pressure. I mean, you had your security and stuff, so you knew what was going on.
Okay, because people today have no idea what it was like to live through the Cold War.
Yeah,
so, so security was tight.
Oh yeah.
You were doing something that you thought might be used against an enemy.
Right, that's what we were there for.
Yeah. Korea was pretty much over by this time. Yeah.
Well, it was still going pretty good.
Yeah, for a year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, were there planes in?
Oh, yeah.
And were they involved at all in the Korean War with the planes that were in Alaska? They wouldn't be.
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, so you went to South Carolina, and then from there?
From South Carolina, I went to Iceland.
Iceland, okay. Mm-hmm. Another one of the warm spots in the world.
Yeah, I went to Iceland in 57,
mm-hmm.
and I came back January 59.
Okay, and what kind of job did you have in Iceland?
I was in charge of the oxygen plant there.
Okay, how did your job change? I mean, from being, I guess, just a worker there, and now by this time now you're in charge of the oxygen plant.
Yeah, I was a staff sergeant, and I was a second ranked man there, I was in charge of the plant.
Okay.
So I had to be responsible for the parts, responsible to make sure we got supplies out, make sure we met production. And that's when I first got there. They had two oxygen plants. They were two A1A oxygen plants.
What does A1A mean?
It's just the model it is. It makes 1 ton of oxygen per day.
I see.
Those, they had two of them. And we got there, they weren't running. And the commander called me in. He says, if you get them plants running, I'll make you tech sergeant. So I got the plants running. And promotion board time come around. I went down to meet the promotion board. And the commander says, you go back to the work. I'm going to meet the board for you. So I made tech sergeant.
Wonderful. And weren't you, did you get an award at this, during this time in Iceland, or was that later?
That was the award I got was in, later.
Okay. All right. So in Iceland, you got these these oxygen plants running, and you met your deadlines, and then now you're a tech sergeant.
Yeah.
And where did you go from there?
I went from there to Chanute Air Force Base, Rantoul, Illinois.
Okay.
And Rantoul, I went to instructor school to be an instructor in gas generation. And I taught school there. When I first got there, we had those 1-ton plants. And then the Air Force Bullet, when they got in the missile program, started the big missile program, they went to got a 25-ton oxygen plant. So I went down to the Keep, went to school on that. I came back and taught that for many years. I was there 9 years.
So you're teaching to other
people that operate and maintain plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then I become course supervisor there at that place. And then they sent me to Vietnam from there. And when I spent my year in Vietnam, I come back to the same base.
Okay, and what year were you in Vietnam?
I went to Vietnam in 57, come back in 59.
No, that was Iceland.
No, yeah, I mean 60.
Yeah.
67.
67.
And then come back in 69.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in Vietnam in 68 during Tet Offensive.
Okay. What was it like in Vietnam at the time? I mean, I know that you were involved in the plant and not, mm-hmm. Engaged in the tactical operations.
Where I was at, I was at Cam Ranh Bay. And Cam Ranh Bay had never been bombed the whole time I was over there. It had been hit.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there about a month and it hit it.
Oh.
Anyhow, so, but you stayed under stress all the time. I mean, you knew you had to make production and get planes out because we were supporting fighters.
Right.
And we were supporting also the welding and stuff on the base and hospitals.
Were there many Vietnamese civilians working there? Or
yeah.
And what was that like?
It was pretty good. He had Vietnamese, the ones I dealt with, they had a taxi service on the base. They'd run the taxis. You'd call for a taxi, and they'd run the taxi, military taxis. And then I had one papa-san worked in the shop there for me. And he made, I think he made 10 cents a day. And I got him a penny per day, and he thought I'd give him $1 million.
Wow. Oh, do you have any other insights about what life was like in Vietnam for them, and or any insights about the war or anything from your?
The only insights I know is you didn't know who you were dealing with. In other words, you may have one working with you today, and he may be against you tonight.
Yeah.
That's what we always said to WhatsApp.
Yeah.
That was pretty close there.
That was part of the problem. And it was during this time that you won the Bronze Star. Is that
I got the Bronze Star when I left there.
Okay. And what was the award for?
We had our plant, and we kept it in real good shape, and we met all our quotas. And also, we had trouble with the plants. From the factory, it had a flexor flaw in them. And I determined where the flaw was. I called the depot. The depot sent some people over there to help us fix it. And not only did we fix our base, I went to another base and helped work on another oxygen plant and repair their problem. And that's how I got the award.
Wow. Okay, so after Vietnam, what?
Vietnam, I went back to Chanute Air Force Base as an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
I was course supervisor. And I was there for... I come back there and I made senior. When I made senior, they put me in base fuels, they put me in the office in base fuels. Because the cryogenics come under the fuels department. So I went in the office working there, keeping paperwork and stuff, course
mm-hmm.
material. And then I was there for a while, still at Chanute. Then I got ordered to go to Mather Air Force Base, California, and they changed my career field.
Wow.
They put me in civil engineering in charge of base fuels and all the heating and air for the base. And I'd never been civil engineer before in my life.
Did they give you any training?
When I got to Mesa Air Force Base, I had a major trainer. He's my boss. Major trainer says, I know you do not know anything about civil engineering because you hadn't been here. He says, you've been an instructor. He says, but we're changing over from the old routine to the new routine in civil engineering. He says, you're going to teach the course, and when you get through, you'll know all about it.
Well, that's true. You learn
so
more.
So that was the first job
something.
I had. He gave me the manual, 8510, had me an Air Force manual, 8510, and told me to take that thing and study for about a month and prepare a course, and I did, and I taught it. And when the IG come through, we got an outstanding rating.
Wow. How big was this manual? Just out of curiosity.
At least
a couple of inches thick.
It covered the scheduling and the planning and the maintenance, and it covered your periodic inspections for equipment and all that stuff. You had to set up a thing to say this piece of equipment takes this long to repair when you inspect it. In other words, and you got another piece of equipment takes so long. And they were setting up a controller system. In other words, when a guy went out to the job to do a job, he got through, he's supposed to call the controller back, and she'd give him another job. And they had had records of how long it took to do these jobs. So that kept people moving, and it kind of improved the maintenance program. So that's what we set up.
We need more efficiency like that now.
Anyhow, that's what we were doing.
Okay, so so now you're like a civil engineer out in California, and this was in the 70s?
This was 72.
Uh-huh. And then
I stayed there till 74, and then they sent me back to Chanute, and I did the same thing as Chanute in civil engineering. They sent me back to civil engineering to do the same thing I did up in Mesa.
Did you have to set up the program there, or?
Start back all over again.
Wow.
So, and then I retired from there.
Why did you decide to retire in 75?
In 75?
Yeah.
I had two kids getting ready to go to college. One was a senior and one was graduating. And I had heard, my dad he worked security guard at a container.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting ready to put an oxygen plant out there.
Oh.
And so my dad said if I was thought about getting out, that I might get a job out there. So I said, well, I might make more money out there than I'm in the service. So I come down here, I wrote them a letter, and they sent me, called me and said, it's got to come down for an interview. So I flew down here for the interview. And by the time I got back home, they said I was hired. I told them, I said, it takes me 90 days to get out of service. And I got out and went to work out there.
Wow. So you really, your whole career in the Air Force prepared you for the kind of job that
right
you...
Right outside. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so you were working for...
Smurfit's company.
Smurfit's...
It was Canadian Corporation when I first went out there.
Okay, and so you came straight back to Fernandina then,
mm-hmm.
and...
I spent 22 years out there.
Ah, okay, and basically in the same kind of
field
that you were doing.
When I got out there, I worked not only at the oxygen plant, I was in maintenance, in the powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still maintenance.
Wow, well, I mean, that's just a great story. Now, let's go back.
Okay.
Because all of a sudden you've got two kids that are going to college. When did you get married, and how did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in 10th grade in school.
Oh, okay.
She lived in Callahan, and I lived here.
Okay.
And so I've known her since 10th grade.
And when did you...
I got married in 1955. It's when I was a Shaw.
Okay, and did she then...
She moved with me.
And the kids were raised on the Air Force bases?
My daughter was born... My son was born at Shaw Air Force Base in South Carolina. And my daughter was born in Chanute Air Force Base and ran to Illinois.
Okay, I thought you said, did you have two boys?
No, two girls.
Oh, two
a girl and a boy.
A girl and a boy, okay, I'm sorry. You said your two children were ready to go going to college.
Mm-hmm.
And did they didn't go with you to Vietnam or anything like
no,
that?
No,
they
no,
stayed
no,
back
no.
here.
They couldn't go, no.
Yeah, I
left
think
them.
So. Yeah, right. How did they, what did they think about life as Air Force brats? Is traveling around and all of that?
Well, they didn't know no different. But it's like a family when you move. I mean, the Air Force. When you're military, they're tighter than your family, really. And in fact, even today's day, we've got friends that we visit with that we was in service with years ago. In fact, I just went to Minnesota and visited one of them
mm-hmm.
that I was in service with. And so they're tight. It's pretty tight.
And I think you said that your son, your grandson is now.
He's in the 82nd Airborne in Iraq.
So did your children go into this?
No, my son is a computerist.
Uh-huh.
My daughter's a nurse at the hospital out here.
So they both live here in Fernandina?
No, my son lives in Tallahassee.
Oh, okay.
And he's in computers. And my daughter, she's a nurse out here in the hospital.
Okay. But then your grandson mm-hmm. went back and decided on a career in the armed services.
Right.
Okay. During your period in the armed services, I know that not only did you win the Bronze Star, but you also won some other...
I got some awards, just monetary awards. And every base I went to, I also got the Air Force Commendation, every base I left.
For keeping everything mm-hmm. online and meeting
right.
your production goals and all
yeah.
of that sort of thing. During your time, were there any interesting incidents or scary incidents? Or any? You want to tell us about some of them?
Well, I had one. We had a guy in Vietnam. He had about 2 days to go to come home to the States. And we're working on the dock to put the cylinder oxygen cylinder on. And he got a chainsaw and he cut his face right down through here. I never will forget that.
Through his cheek?
Right through that bone right there. He had 2 days before he came back to the States.
Oh. So what happened?
Well, we rushed him to the hospital.
Yeah.
And then they erected him back to the seats.
Wow.
And that's the last I heard of him.
Yeah.
So
were there many other accidents in the plants?
No. That's all one I had.
Oh, wow. Well, that's pretty impressive for such a long career.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any funny stories or anything else? I mean, I know that you made lifelong friends during this time.
No, I don't know the stories. Just
okay. Okay.
I did have orders to go to E9 school when I got out.
You went to what?
I say I had orders to go to E9 school when I got out of service,
uh-huh.
but I turned that down because I had to spend 2 more years in service if I went, and I turned that down and got out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense, especially when you had a job sitting here, and you've made another career out of that.
Yeah.
So, and then you were back home anyway, where I'm sure that you wanted to wind up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's great that you not only served your country, but that you were able, you got such relevant training that you were able to
apply it outside.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It doesn't always happen.
No,
but
it don't.
Yeah, but in your case, it worked out very well for both our country and for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, I wanted to thank you very much for this interview. I think that you gave us good insight into many of the kinds of support services that there are in the military. Yeah. We seem to focus all the time on the combat
part,
but what the kind of support that is provided is essential.
Yeah, right.
And it was just a fascinating story. So I want to thank you for your recollections for the benefit of our nation. And this concludes the interview with James H. Jones.